Good morning, everyone. The Mary Griffith Show is underway. I'm surrounded by lawyers, one in person, one over the phone, and we're going to talk today about the need for good legal representation for the poor. So we're going to introduce our players. Jeff Miller is here. He makes a return appearance on the Mary Griffith Show. Jeff is in charge of legal services of Eastern Missouri and their Hannibal office, which serves all of Northeast Missouri. And joining me via the phone lines is a gentleman named Robert Hollers, and he served as an intern this past summer at Legal Services of Eastern Missouri. Good morning, Robert Hollers.
Good morning, Mary.
Tell us a little bit about yourself, and then we'll get more specifically into what you did this summer. But tell us a little bit about yourself, please.
Well, I'm a third-year law student at Southern Illinois University, specializing in public interest law. And I live in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, and I'm looking forward to taking the bar this coming summer.
Will you be practicing in Wisconsin or Illinois or wherever?
Either Illinois or Wisconsin.
Okay. Well, we're glad to hear it. Let's talk a little bit about the program. You hang on, Robert. If you've got anything to add, you just hop right in. Jeff Miller, let's talk about this. The Summer Legal Corps, this is what Robert was involved in. You know, the best way to get a great job after college is to have a good summer internship. It also lets you know if that's the kind of work you'd like to do. I mean, just like doctors have specialties, lawyers have specialties, and it takes a special kind of person to be a legal representative for those who are low income and disadvantaged. So tell us a little bit about the internship program.
Well, that it does, Mary. And by the way, good morning. It's nice to be back again. This program, we got an email from Legal Service Corporation back in December of 2015, and it was sent out nationwide, and there could be applications for this Rural Summer Legal Corps Fellowship. We applied for it, and I'm pleased to say that we were one of 31 that were granted this to have an intern come. That was nationwide. You know,
that's pretty good.
It was great. You talk about being an attorney for the poverty stricken. This is something else with that. Not only poverty stricken, but we're talking about in the rural communities of the United States,
where there often is a shortage of lawyers.
Absolutely. In fact, in our 14 Northeast Missouri counties, there's quite a few that there are two attorneys there, and one happens to be the prosecutor, and one's the public defender, and that's it. So when we applied and we were awarded this internship, we then received a list of applicant profiles. They got to look at us, and we got to look at them, and that's sort of where we came up with the match with Robert, and we had Robert for roughly 8 to 10 weeks. Part of the program is they had to put in 300 hours interning with us, and Robert got to travel all over Northeast Missouri.
And what a thrill for you. What a thrill for you, Robert.
It really was. And I was really impressed with just the level of skill that the attorneys with Legal Services of Eastern Missouri and, you know, the entire staff there, they were very welcoming and just incredibly qualified.
Well, let's talk a little bit about your experience. Now, obviously, there's confidentiality. You're not going to be able to reveal some details, but what kind of work did you do, and what kind of people did you serve? Because I imagine if it wasn't for your help with some of these legal projects, these people may never have a chance to be represented in the court system.
Well, we worked with clients that were dealing with domestic violence issues, several clients that were seeking orders of protection. There were some other domestic violence issues that we assisted with, also some financial matters.
Is it a problem in rural America because, as Jeff Miller just said, in some of these counties you have very few attorneys, so, you know, you've got to be careful because an attorney cannot represent someone. You can't come to someone, let's, for example, if I'm the attorney for a corporation, and then a woman comes in and says, I want to file, you know, I want to order protection against my husband, or I need help in a divorce. If the husband owns that corporation that that lawyer's already representing, he cannot take on that woman as a client. When there are few attorneys in rural America, is that one of the problems, finding legal representation? Because the pool is so small, and maybe some lawyers don't feel comfortable dealing with, quote, that kind of loss of a legal matter, an order protection or a filing of that kind.
Well, it definitely serves organizations such as Legal Services of Eastern Missouri certainly fill a void that is there. And if it were not for what they do, then there would be people that would have absolutely no representation in court.
And what does that make you feel like as a soon-to-be attorney, someone who is going to hopefully pass the bar and be in practice? How does that make you feel as someone who came from a larger community, Milwaukee, to really get to realize what it's like out there in farm country, USA?
Well, I think that the same issues that rural organizations face are similar to the issues that underserved communities and urban areas face, because it's not only a matter of not having enough attorneys, there are financial issues that prevent the poor from seeking, you know, achieving adequate counsel as well. So I found that there were a lot of similarities between working like at internships in a area that I worked at an internship in Carbondale, Illinois, and in Carbondale, because there are law schools, there's quite a few attorneys that practice in Carbondale. I found that the issues while working in Carbondale were very similar to the issues that clients faced in Hannibal.
Yeah, it is kind of intriguing. And jump in, Jeff Miller, please, because, again, it's access to representation and, there again, affordable access to representation, which is what Legal Services provides. And we want to make sure these are not criminal cases. This is all civil. And Legal Services doesn't do criminal cases. That's what prosecutors and public defenders are for. And a lot of us get our mind wrapped around the criminal court system, and we forget that there's a large civil court system that protects consumers, that protects renters and landlords, that protects people who are abused and beaten. And these are issues that are universal, no matter whether you look out your front door and see a cornfield or you look out your front door and see a 16-story government high-rise project. It's the same kind of people that need that help, right?
Yes.
Okay.
One thing I want to say there, Mary, is when we were talking about especially our 14 counties in northeastern Missouri, and we talked about one or two attorneys being in some of the counties, what poses the biggest problem is the conflicts.
Mm-hmm.
You know, obviously, if
I mentioned that, you know, you can't represent somebody if you've already got the other person as
right.
a client.
And so that's where we really come into place a lot there. And,
you know, there used to be a joke down in Hannibal, because I lived in Hannibal for 9 years, that the day after you get married, go down to the best divorce lawyer. I won't give him a free ad, but we all knew who he was. Go down and put your name on his list. Because if you ever get divorced, you want to make sure he's on your side, not the other guy's side. You don't need the prenup. You need the post-divorce lawyer. So that was the joke. But there again, you know, you do run into those problems with these civil proceedings. There are, I've known people, and this seems weird to me. I don't even know why it's allowed. One lawyer representing both sides in a divorce case. Now, in your estimation, Robert Hollers, is that a good idea? Is that ethical? Is that allowable? What are the pitfalls of that?
I would say that none of the above. It's not really ethical. I would not recommend it, just because, you know, each attorney should represent each individual.
Right.
And since we operate under an adversarial type of system, you know, it's best to have your own attorney.
Yeah, you can really only be attorney for one person. I mean, it's kind of hard to be look out for the best interest of two people, even if it's a peaceful divorce. There's always some controversy, and it's hard to be in favor of both sides simultaneously, isn't it?
Exactly.
Isn't that what also happens with orders of protection or some of these other things? There may be an abusive relationship that may swing both ways sometimes in the home. And again, one lawyer should not be representing both clients in a case like that.
Absolutely.
How prevalent do you think spousal abuse, elder abuse is another big growing problem, child abuse, which is more of a criminal, you know, matter. Of course, they are all criminal matters if they get to that level. How big a problem is that in Northeast Missouri, do you think, or is it just it's a big problem everywhere?
Well, I think it's a problem everywhere. And, you know, a lot of times people think that that the only type of abuse is physical abuse. There can be mental abuse also, that where someone doesn't actually, you know, hit their spouse, but they might just be verbally abusive and constantly abusing them and degrading them. And then, you know, legal services of Eastern Missouri would be there for that client as well, because there's more than just one type of abuse.
And also, yeah, isolation, financial. You know, sometimes in these rural areas, you're very isolated. If you don't have a vehicle or you don't have an income of your own, you can be kind of trapped in a situation. Robert, we're going to have to probably let you go. I know you're busy. I hope you're studying. By the way, you know, you really ought to try to practice in Missouri. I know lots of lawyers, and if they can pass the bar, I'm sure you can too.
Well, I used to live in St. Louis, so it's always a possibility.
What was the thing you take away from this? I mean, obviously, they chose you to be their intern. You wanted to work for them as well. What was the most expected thing that happened, and maybe what was the most unexpected thing that happened in your term in Northeast Missouri, and what do you take away from the experience?
Well, I expected that I would be working with very competent and highly skilled attorneys, just because Legal Services of Eastern Missouri has a wonderful reputation nationwide. I did not expect to be greeted upon my very first day with such open arms and to have the support of the attorneys and the staff that work there.
And what was the unexpected thing that happened? Well, that was unexpected to get the warm welcome. What was the expected thing that happened?
Well, I expected that I would be working with highly competent attorneys.
Okay. And then what was your takeaway from the whole thing?
It was probably the most rewarding experience of my law school career. It confirmed that I do want to work with legal aid organizations. And it was just all around a wonderful experience.
Now, Robert Hollers, before I let you go, I want to explore that statement you just made, because one of my best friends in the whole world used to run Legal Services of Northeast Missouri, and I always used to say, why are you doing this? You know, you could hang out your shingle and you can make three times more money, you know, than why is it such a commitment? Why is it so important to you that your practice deal with those who are most disenfranchised and most in need of legal representation and yet probably most unable to access and afford it? Why is that on your soul when you could go out and, you know, make $250,000 the first year if you hung your shingle out in the, you know, on Shepherd Avenue in Milwaukee where my girlfriend lives?
Well, I think it's just the reward that comes from knowing that you're helping someone that is in a helpless situation, and just the fulfillment that comes from knowing that you've made a difference in someone's life.
Okay, well, I think you should practice at Legal Services of Eastern Missouri, and you should have your practice in Hannibal. So that's the mission I'm going to set on your soul, okay?
Let me pitch one thing there, Mary. If I may, I would say Robert's surprise really may have been the majestic courthouses that we have in Northeast Missouri. And in fact, one that I won't mention, Robert walked in and he looked at a sign and he looked at it again and he says, "That sign says no spitting on the floor." And I said, "Yes, it does. It's all glossed. It looked like it had been back there in the 1800s, and
oh,
they
no,
preserved
we still,
it.
We still need it. Yes. We still need those signs in our courthouses here. Also, you probably had the great distinction of being in a county that has two courthouses. Marion County has one in Hannibal and one in Palmyra, so you can take that and tell that little anecdote all over the place. You say, I've got to be in court. You better make sure you know which court you're going to, right?
That's
exactly.
Well, Robert, it's been delightful meeting you via the phone lines. I wish you luck in your career. I think it's great what you're doing. If we do need more lawyers in the world, we need more lawyers like you. How's that? I'll just leave it at that. And, you know, I also will keep your name on file because I know you're not going to be doing a lot of criminal cases, but I probably will need you in a criminal capacity more than anything. So, and Jeff Miller's already told me he wouldn't represent me under any shape or form. Yeah. So I'm putting your name down on the top of my list, okay?
Excellent.
Okay. Well, thank you, and I'm sure you enjoyed your time, especially in God's country, Shelby County, Missouri.
Absolutely.
Thank you so very much. Now get back to the books and study and work hard, okay?
Okay. Thank you, Mary.
Thank you. Wow. We need more lawyers like that. Yeah.
He even got to visit Scotland County.
Wow.
Way up in Memphis.
How many? That brings up to mind, you mentioned that there aren't a lot of attorneys. Of course, if you are an attorney, you kind of have cornered the market. You're the only game in town. You don't have to advertise. There's only one place to go. But where are we talking? Like Scotland County has got a very low population. Shelby County, a lot of these counties have very low populations. What are we talking about for the number of attorneys who are practicing? Now, obviously, you can live in Hannibal and still go up and have a case in Scotland County, and they do all the time.
Sure.
But, I mean, as far as literally your hometown or whatever lawyer, how many are there in some of these counties?
Well, Scotland's a good example. Lewis is a good example. A lot of times what happens is you will have an attorney that may be a part-time prosecutor, and then they're allowed to practice civil law.
To make up a will or something
exactly.
Like that. But it's very difficult because if you're the prosecutor, you have to be very careful what kind of clients you take because you don't want to have to recuse yourself and then have a special prosecutor. And
that's correct. The conflicts are just all over the place. Again, a lot of times there are two and three attorneys, and that's it.
That's it. So. Yeah. Get your name on the list for the best one first. We're going to take a break. When we come back, Jeff Miller, you'll stick around. We'll still talk, okay?
Sure.
Sounds great. We are back. Talk Radio 930 WTAD. Jeff Miller, who looks like a surfing rock star right now, just to let you know. And I always love it when people from Legal Services of Eastern Missouri, I've loved all of the directors that come over from the Hannibal office. And, Jeff, you continue that long line of lawyers who, it's very intriguing, because I think a lot of people go into the law because of the money they can make. And yet, you know, there are people who still have, you know, a mission or a higher purpose, I guess, that they're willing to forego. Not that you're not paid. You're not volunteering for this gig. But, you know, so I applaud you for what you do. I have a question to ask you now I've been waiting to ask you. I knew you were coming on Friday. Recently, the head of the Missouri Public Defender's Office got mad because the state wasn't giving the Public Defender's Office enough money. So I know it is true that the bar can force anyone to take a case. And this guy forced Governor Jay Nixon to do some pro bono work. Will Nixon actually really have to do that? He can't say no, can he? I mean, you have to do it, don't you?
Well, it'll be interesting. I think that they're already bickering back and forth of, you know, Nixon's probably saying as a public official
he should recuse himself or something
from doing something like that. But that's been an ongoing battle for a long time.
But, I mean, it's intriguing because I think many people are unaware. I cannot be forced as a broadcaster to work at an underserved radio station somewhere. They can't say, now, Mary, on Saturday you have to go down to Southern Illinois and work at the station in Cairo there because there aren't enough radio broadcasters. But lawyers appearing before the bar can be regularly asked to take on assignments, and you can't say no if you have a legitimate conflict of interest or something, but pretty much you can be forced to work, can't you?
Absolutely.
It's kind of crazy, isn't it?
It's one of the things that when we're in the bar that they can force you to do something. Long before Legal Services of Eastern Missouri, attorneys were appointed to civil cases also.
Right.
And
that, thank goodness they were. These people wouldn't have any representation at all.
Right.
And so you still, perhaps, if lawyers in your office, because of conflict of interest or something, you can still appeal to the judge and say, we really need to cover this. Can you please, cast about to see a lawyer who would do this pro bono?
Sure.
And whether they want to do it pro bono or not. So what if you were given Governor Jay Nixon for a week and he had to do his pro bono work at Legal Services, would he be doing wills? What would you make that boy do, for his pro bono sentence up in Hannibal, Missouri? What would be a good use of his time? You probably have a backlog of cases that are really the tricky ones. That's what I'd give him, wouldn't it be? The ones nobody else wants.
Well, it would be, obviously, you'd probably give the cases that no one wanted to do. But I think get his feet wet on some order of protections and just see the domestic abuse that's really out there.
Yeah. I'm sure he's not unaware of it, but it would
sure.
be eye-opening. And again, many people who graduate from law school, some of them never even bother to take the bar because they don't plan to be a, quote, practicing attorney. And many others take the bar, and then they give up their practice, and they go into something else. But once they have the training, and if they maintain their bar membership, they can be coerced, I guess, into doing some free work. So it'd be kind of interesting.
And I think that's with Governor Nixon. Obviously he was prosecutor for a good many years, and he still pays his bar
sure.
membership dues.
So put him in the public defender's office and give him some of those cases, and maybe
be interesting to see how that turns out.
Be interesting to see how that turns out. Well, Jeff Miller, let's talk in the time we have left. Obviously, you probably greatly appreciated having an intern this summer, not only because it was a great opportunity for all the lawyers that are associated with Legal Services to kind of mentor and encourage that young future lawyer, but also to do some of the workload. There still is, it seems like there'll never be enough lawyers in Northeast Missouri to handle really all the legal things that go on. So how does your office decide what cases you're going to take and what ones you will have to say, no, I'm sorry, we don't have the funding for that right now?
Well, two things there. One, that sort of lies in my lap, the responsibility. The intakes are for our office are done out of our central intake in St. Louis. They're sent up to us. I review the cases and then decide how we're going to approach them. Some cases we have to just give counsel and advice because of the funding and all. But also with Robert here this summer, I think one of the greatest things, that's also a two-way street. He learned from us, but we also learned from him also. One of the things, you have a young, fresh person coming into the law, and you remember what that was like and how you want to help everybody. It's always a good eye-opening thing. And I never forget the first case I gave Robert. He was on it for about a week. And I said, Robert, where are we at here? I said, we got to move. We've got others going on. And
that is funny because in journalism school, they'd give you an assignment and you'd have a week to write a story. And now this morning we had breaking news and I had 3 minutes before my next newscast, this news broke, and I had to get something somewhat intelligible on the air. And so, young lawyers, well, I've got this one case, and I think it's going to be ready for, ready to go in 6 months. No, it's got to be ready by this afternoon at 4 because I've got 10 other cases you've got to work on. So it's
We have an order of protection hearing this afternoon.
That's
we've
right.
got to be ready.
Those are especially on a very tight timeline. Well, Jeff, before I let you go, I just want to give you a chance to talk, make a closing remark. Mm-hmm. Anything else that I wasn't smart enough to talk to you about today that you just want to let people know?
Well, and I'll tie this sort of back to the intern again. What I want to say is it's always a good eye-opening thing. Whenever I came out of private practice and took this job here, and I think I'm number four. That's what they tell me, that I'm number four.
And you came from Louisiana, Missouri private practice, right?
I did. And whenever I took this, it's something that whenever I'm reviewing an intake, sometimes I just have to set it to the side and look at it again. It's just very eye-opening of how many people need help. It's unbelievable. I wish I could take every case, but that's just impossible. But we take as many as we can, and we still only get about 50-some percent that we can take out of all of them that call.
Well, thank goodness for those lawyers who, in the private sector, will do pro bono work, because without them, you really couldn't make it.
Oh, absolutely.
Last question. What's your budget? What's the budget of legal services of Eastern Missouri? And if you can, break it down into what do you get for Northeast Missouri or the Hannibal office? What's the budget that you're operating on?
Well, that's above my pay grade.
Okay.
So that's sort of an easy answer there.
He spends the money. He doesn't have to worry about where the money comes from. Jeff, always a delight. Come back more often. As always, anytime you ask to be on, we always say yeah.
Well, thank you.
We love having you on.
Sure.
And Robert, please come back and practice in Northeast Missouri. Milwaukee does not need you, Robert. We do. And we are so pleased to be starting another season, the 90th season of the Quincy Civic Music Association, bringing the world to Quincy. And that means Dr. Carol Matheson is back, fresh off a trip to Italy. And we'll have a little bit of time to talk about that. But first and foremost, let's talk about the Quincy Civic Music Association, Dr. Matheson. So glad to have you here.
Well, good to be here, Mary. Always appreciate all of the wonderful things that you say about the Civic Music Association.
Well, another fresh group of Culver Stockton College is arriving today, too. And so you'll have a few of those that you'll be helping out. But you wear a lot of hats in our community, and I thank you for all your work. And with the Civic Music Association, it's a true love of yours to bring a wide variety of arts to our entire community. So let's talk about the season.
Okay, and as we always say with Civic Music Association, this is such a culturally rich area anyway, that what we do is sort of the icing on the cake. We bring professional groups from international starting points.
We don't need to have the symphony come to have a symphony. We have a symphony. We don't need theatrical to come. We have a theater. But you always bump it up a big notch with dance and with performing arts and with music and with everything else.
That's right. And this is indeed a dance year. We are going to have a Russian ballet company coming and doing Prokofiev's Cinderella.
Oh, how
and
wonderful.
So this is always such a thrill for the young dancers that we have in the area, fine studios that we have here. But for them to see professional dance is really good for them. Yeah, the 90th season, and this is a very eclectic season that we have coming up. Let me first say that there are 5 concerts, and I want to make sure that people understand that membership, that if you get a season's ticket for this, you may think, oh gosh, I'm not sure that I can get to all 5 of those. But for $75, you can get a season ticket, and if you happen to need to miss one of them, then maybe you will be able to go to one of the concerts at our Hannibal partners, the Hannibal Arts Council partners, and also Keokuk. They have season's tickets, and we have a reciprocity with them.
And I use it, and it's wonderful, because Hannibal and Keokuk also have wonderful, similar
they do.
Associations.
The Hannibal and the Keokuk ones are usually from closer, and ours is maybe a little bit more international, but all really top-flight good music programs.
So $75 for 5 shows, and really for 7 shows, because you can use one punch at Keokuk and one punch in Hannibal as well. So what have we got this year? You've already mentioned the ballet, but let's kind of take it in chronological order. What do we start with?
Okay, we have the first concert on October 1st is violinist Jason Yang featuring Jake Moulton doing vocal percussion, which is beatbox.
Oh, wow.
So this is someone who has toured with Madonna. He's been on Colbert Report. He's been on Glee. And yet he's also a classically trained violinist. He plays electric violin.
Electric violin, which just the instrument itself is so unusual looking, you know. Mm-hmm. There's really not much to it. I mean, it's almost invisible.
Doesn't need to be.
Doesn't
Don't
need
have to
be.
Have the resonating chamber. It's got that through electronics. On the other hand, You have to have the technique. And he does, the classically trained technique. So this will be quite the eclectic program. He will play, of course, classical music, things that we, the standards that we expect. But also, since he has played with Madonna, he's played with Glee, he plays some of these things that are much more contemporary. And with Jake Moulton along doing beatbox, all of this vocal percussion, that's really interesting to see as well as hear.
And so that will be intriguing. So for those of you who think that violin music is stuffy and it's just either a lady in a long ball gown or a gentleman in a tuxedo, this is going to be a moving show.
That's right. Yeah. That will be. However, we do have the traditional stuff, too, because the next concert is the Jupiter String Quartet. And the Jupiter, this is they're in residence in at the University of Illinois in Champaign-Urbana. And so they are very much chamber music performers. And so we have that in a smaller venue. They're going to be at John Wood at the Orr Auditorium there. And Jason Yang is going to be at QCT. So the venue, we are all over the city this year.
Good.
Yeah.
Good. Although you've had wonderful venues in the past, it always is nice to use as many venues as possible. It's great. It gives more people a chance to see the shows, that's for sure. So, okay, we go from electric violin to traditional chamber choir, but I'm sure they'll play perhaps some contemporary music. Does Jupiter play contemporary
music? Yes, they do. So it's the whole spectrum. People who train, highly professionally trained people, can play many styles.
And sometimes they like modern music.
And they
so
do,
they play
and
it.
And the audiences, it's a little bit of something for everybody. Then the next one, we're going, you know, the whole range of history as well as music styles. We have the Vienna Boys Choir back. We haven't had them for years. And this is fine, fine music that stretches all the way back in tradition to the 13th century. And still they have them singing.
And if you ever wondered if a $75 season ticket was worth it, it's worth $75 just to see the Vienna Boys Choir. And one thing we have to mention is that $75 cost is only for adults. Students and children under the age of 18 are always admitted free of charge. So once mom and pop get their season ticket, you can bring the whole family.
Absolutely. And that's something to really keep in mind, especially when you see the youngsters here in the Vienna Boys Choir or the dancers when the ballet comes. Another program is, of course, the college students, the member colleges that we have, Culver Stockton and Quincy University and John Wood Community College. Those member colleges also can get in for the students for just showing their student ID.
When will the Vienna Boys Choir be here?
The Vienna Boys Choir are going to be here February the 15th.
Okay. And then what's next?
And after that, we have the Russian National Ballet. They're here on March 22nd. And then the final concert is April 22nd and is the Chicago Gargoyle Brass and Organ Ensemble.
Okay. We had the organ last year from the Civic Music Association. I was fascinated by that. I mean, it was very wonderful. So what is a gargoyle brass band and organ ensemble?
This is a group from Chicago. Now, obviously, even though Cameron Carpenter was able to tour his magnificent
touring organ,
especially for that, you can't do that with a regular pipe organ.
No.
And so this is a group from Chicago that does tour, but the poor organist has to get used to whatever organ is there. Fortunately, we have a very fine one at St. John, and so they're able to use that and have a brass ensemble. Now, this isn't...
And they will not be disappointed with that organ.
Oh, no.
I'm sure sometimes
oh, no.
when they come into town, they're like, you're kidding me. This one, they probably don't want to leave.
Oh, no. It's absolutely true. We used it. That was one of the big perks that we had when we did Suor Angelica with the Muddy River Opera, mm-hmm. because the organ there was so fine, and we were able to incorporate it with the orchestra. No, the tradition of using instruments with organ is also very old. Anybody who got married to a trumpet voluntary, that would have been organ with trumpet and instruments played. The organ was just the continual part, the underscoring part for an ensemble. And the Organ Guild, our Organ Guild, is going to be one of the sponsors of this next concert, too.
Well, it's exciting. Now we're going to run out of time, so how can we get tickets? You've got about 30 seconds to put the sell on us.
Okay. And this also has an art competition amongst the colleges for the cover design, too. So this is a big year. If you want to, please go to quincycivicmusic.org/index.php, and you can get tickets online for that. Now, some people prefer to get their tickets by mail, and you just do QCMA Box 1165, Quincy.
Okay. Quincy Civic Music Association, if you have not been a member in the past, you'll definitely want to be a member this year. $75 for adults. Children and students always admitted free. Do not miss this year.